This is a Pinball News production.
I'm Claude Fernandez, game designer. I think Rob really scrubbed the bottom of the barrel when he called me at home a few months ago.
Right into it.
Right. And, repeat myself. I think Rob called me about 4 or 5 months ago at home. He said, "Hey, Claude, we're going to have Flash Gordon at the game, at the expo. Would you like to come over and talk about it?" And my first reaction was, "Nah, not really." And then I thought about it. I said, "Well, it's been over 20 years since I came to a pinball expo, so I figure I'd give it a shot. I'm not a very good public speaker, as you want to see, but I spent 20 years as a game designer and 20 years out of the business, and I haven't returned to the business that much, and even though I kept an ear to the ground, see what's going on through the years, and I'm really, really impressed with what's going on as far as the evolution of pinball. And so I really didn't put much thought about what I was going to say today, but I think I want to say that Flash Gordon was the game that basically never was going to happen, and it came really close to never be a game, and for this I want to explain a little bit about it. I started at Bally in 79, December of 79, and prior to that I used to work at Williams. But if I give you a quick background on me, I started with Atari back in 1976. I was out of the Navy for a few years. After 4 years, went to work for Atari. The name Bushnell has been mentioned before. I was one of the guys that was playing with Pong in those days. And I met Steve Ritchie at Atari, Mark Ritchie. Steve at the time was working in the lab. I was a mechanical designer at the time. And my job was to work with the pinball guys. And that was my extent of pinball, period. And so I worked for a couple of years in designing, helping with Siverici on the layout and working around the lab. And after a few years, I figure, what the hell? Maybe I can do that myself. So Steve moved to Williams in 78, and I followed not long after that. And I worked with Steve for a couple of years on Flash and many of his other games in the early 80s. My first game was actually called Blackout out of Williams. It's a game that I work on my own time. And not long after that, I was offered an opportunity to go to work at Bally. They basically doubled my salary and gave me a contract. I couldn't say no, so I was young and foolish, so I took the job, little did I know. And I got to tell you that just there's going to be some comparison between Flash and Black Knight that I want to make. And I think it's a good comparison, and I'll tell you why. A few months before I went to Bally, Steve Ritchie was working on, I didn't know it was Black Knight at the time, but he was working on a two-level game. And basically what I knew about it was one play field and one half play field on top of the other. That was my understanding of a two-level play field. And I didn't know the shot coming from the bottom, scooping back to the top. Steve was smart enough not to show me the play field or tell me about the name, because he knew I was going to Bally at the time. And so I joined Bally. And as you can expect, there was a lot of competition between the companies in those days, right? They still do, except it's only one. So I got called into the president of the Bally, Mr. Billy O'Donnell Jr. And we had a chat for a few minutes, and he said, "So what Williams working on these days?" And I wasn't thinking much. I said, "Well, they're working on a two-play field game." And my first reaction was, crap, I shouldn't have said that, because I really didn't want it to say that. I had some loyalty, not too much to William, but certainly towards Steve as far as a game designer, and I didn't really want it to say anything about it, but it came out. So the cat was out of the bag, and naturally they say, "Well, we want the two-level games at the next show." And the next show was 4 months away. So my thought was, I don't know what those guys are smoking, but 4 months? You got to be kidding me. You know, my understanding of designing a game was pretty much it takes a year and a half to get a pinball to go from layout to design to production. So 4 months was, it wasn't going to happen in my mind. But it did. And it was a hell of a team effort, let me tell you that. And I will, before I move on to the playfield, I think I want to let Kevin introduce himself, since he's the alpha of the game. But
hi, everybody. Kevin O'Connor. I started my art career in about the mid-70s with a printing company, just drawing, you know, nuts and bolts and mechanical parts. At that time, I started looking around for other work and had landed a job as a point of purchase designer. And basically, we did beer signs and signs for the liquor company. And I was looking around for a little better better salary, and I moved to another point of purchase outfit in Morton Grove, also designing beer signs, where I met a young fellow who was already working there. His name was Greg Ferris, and that was the start of our friendship. Not long after that, I answered an ad in the paper for an artist at the world's largest manufacturer of coin-operated amusement machinery, which was very vague to me. I had no idea what I was getting into, but when I wound up at the address that day for my appointment, it was the Bally Pinball plant on a Western and Belmont in Chicago, and the person that met me at the door was Paul Ferris, so I continued there. And yeah, that's actually that's at Western and Belmont. Yeah, I believe that is. That was the new area that they had built for the art department. So some of the early games that I did there were there was a home game they were working on called Galaxy Ranger. But I think the first game I ever actually really put out was Strikes and Spares. And that was all done in the flat silkscreen method technique. Some games prior to Flash Gordon were Supersonic. I believe Kiss was before then. Silverball Mania, Viking, Mystic, and Star Trek, absolutely. I have that written right here. Star Trek. And in those days, licensing has become a whole new world 30 years later than it was at that time. We were given very little to go by as far as visual images to put on a pinball machine, and pretty much had to make it up either out of our heads, or maybe they would give us a little brochure, which is all we had for KISS. Star Trek was a little different. There was, we did get some still photography from them, and Flash Gordon was basically a little booklet, I think is all we had visually. It was just a booklet that had, you know, it was 10 pages and had some scenes from the movie. Licensing industry since then has exploded into, they employ floors of people just for licensing alone. They have their own art departments, so on and so forth. Style guides that we receive from licensing corporations are very thorough and must be followed very closely. But this wasn't the case in Flash Gordon, so we had very little to go by. And maybe Claude can refresh my memory as to when we got to see the movie, or was it during? Or?
Yeah, I think we had an early preview of the movie.
Okay, yeah. So there, you know, I think there was very, very few images to go by, and it was almost by memory we did a lot of this stuff. And I don't know, I'll throw it back to Claude to keep go from there.
All right. So let's talk about the beginning of Flash Gordon. That was a game that I really didn't want it to do for the reason I mentioned earlier, but that wasn't my job, so I had to. So my first thought was, I knew how Williams has, Steve Ritchie has what became Blackout. The playfield was one full playfield and half a playfield above it. So my first thought was, I don't want to copy any of it. I want to be obviously different. So what I ended up doing, instead of taking two playfields, I took one playfield, cut it across the top, and raised it up with some rail at the bottom. That gave me my two playfield level. And the shot back to the top, obviously, again, I didn't have the choice. I mean, I had to take a ramp from the bottom to the top. What I discovered very early on was the shot off the ramp didn't exactly work out as expected. At the time at Bally, all the pinball had one spring action from the ball shooter. So the very first time I placed the whitewood into the cabinet and I shot the ball, the entrance shot, the ball just flew right off the ramp and out of the game, basically, and hit the glass. So we had to quickly come up with different spring strength, different color, to find out the right spring. That was my first job. Just find the right spring action that will give me enough home for the ball to make it back to the second play field, but still not strong enough to fly off the game. The game, actually, I spent about a week thinking about it. I know I didn't have a lot of time, and we had only one crack at it. Only one play field. Typically, a game designer will go through at least two white wood just to make sure the game is correct. And you move things around, you patch the play field, and typically you want a second white wood to make your final game. But that wasn't the case. It was one of the instances where we had one crack at it, and it had to be right at the beginning. There was no turning back. So I put a week thinking about it, and like most successful thing that happened in your life, I designed again on a napkin, pretty much. It was a Sunday morning. I had breakfast and I took a napkin and started laying out the play field. I wanted the shot, the entrance shot to be, what I wanted to do on the second level, pretty much, and kind of dictate itself, right? The ball comes up to the second level, little flipper, targets. Another shot to the left, ramping back to the second level. You have to feed the ball two ways. And there was a kicker that Bally had that kicked it both ways. It's a double-sided action kicker that Jim Patla used in previous game. I think Matahari was one of them. And the challenge on that one was to find the right spring and the right coil action to actually kick the ball back to the top, because as you can see, the up action is much stronger than the lower action. So that was another little challenge that we had. And I came back on a Monday morning and laid out like the game pretty much on the mile, like we all do. And lucky enough, I mean, the game, we built the very first whitewood. The game was okay. I mean, I won't say okay, it was good for what it was. The action was not my favorite one, but for the game and the shot and the way we wanted to go about it, I think that was, in my mind, that was sufficient. So after basically building the first whitewood and making their own parts, in those days we had a little machine shop and we make our own little ramp and we build our play field and our plastics and everything else in the lab, and we make our own harnesses, wire one at a time, and basically you look for action. And after the first whitewood, basically we turned that over to the art department once we thought that was the final one, so they could get going. The time was clicking, the clock was moving fast. We had only about 3 months to go for the show. And so we turned the play field basically to the art department, and Kevin took over from there. So I let him follow up on it.
Well, bear in mind, the designers at the time are using, by today's standards, primitive, just a sharp pencil, compass, curves, and that's. But they had to be very precise. And for us, they would come to us on a clear film. I believe they would take a print on a clear film. And we would work over that on our vellum with our inks and our rapidograph pens and our circle templates and, just rulers and T-squares and such. That this was given to me. I was probably one of the faster artists. Dave Christensen, because of the amount of detail that he would take, and he would just like noodle away for hours and hours and hours there. And Paul was, of course, very busy, just kind of with day-to-day management things. They said, well, we better give this to O'Connor. He's the only guy who's fast enough to do this. So, and it became a fast-track project, which also became a challenge because of the two levels and not having much visual material to go by. But I had, envisioned that I wanted this to be predominantly a red and black game. I had a theme in mind that it was a red and black game because of the Flash Gordon had, he had a sort of a insignia on his, unlike the Buster Crab, black and white, this was in color. Of course, I was a huge Buster Crab, Flash Gordon. That would be on Sunday mornings when we'd sit around and watch Flash Gordon and the Lone Ranger and, some great Commando Cody, some just really great black and white Sunday morning shows. But when I got an idea of what the insignia and what his clothing was going to be like, it just came to me that this should be a black and red game. As you can see by the painting up here, the back glass, only the diamond shape and peripheral figures were actually painted with acrylic paint on a illustration board. And the way we planned out the rest, so we would have nice rich color, the rest would be flat silkscreen red. And what you see on the back glass, the sort of lightning bolt type of design. And it actually worked out pretty well. I do remember at one point, one of Ming's army that I think it's on the back glass up at the top, one of his sort of robot soldiers. I think at one time we had a strobe light in there, but it was so powerful that it was blowing people's eyes out.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, the original had actually a strobe light, and we did remove it because people were complaining about the brightness and they couldn't see the play field. So, yeah. It was a great idea at the time, though.
So the playfield was done, was inked all with a rapidograph pen. It was actually before I had started to use a brush to ink everything, which once I found the brush, I never went back because that was the way comic book illustrators pretty much worked with a brush. And you can get a good thick and thin lines, and it served me well in the future. I wound up inking, just everyone would give their playfields to me to ink. John Yowsey and Greg and everyone said, here, gave it to me. I was relatively fast at it, too, so it was one of the harder parts you would do. I've done Pat McMahon's inking also. It's just something not everyone wants to do. It's kind of a messy job, and you need to be pretty precise with it. But back then I was using rapidograph pens, or basically a needle with ink coming out of it. So it was a pretty painstaking procedure. And
just one question, Kevin. Do you recall how long it took for the playfield, the actual Pence and Playfield to get back to us?
Well, one thing that's different these days, to digress a bit, is they give me, I get Playfields long before they are finalized or approved. They're very, very vague and rough versions of what the final playfield is. When I first started at Bally, a playfield that would be done first, then they would attach a theme to it. So by the time Claude came with his whitewood, it's probably pretty much done for the artwork. So I may have done it in two to three weeks.
Yeah, about 2 to 3 weeks, yeah.
Because this whole thing, this whole art package had to come together, you know, Buteritz, playfield, cabinet,
back glass,
within 3 months.
Yeah, maybe. that's if anything, I think Flash Gordon to actually make it to the show was really, really a fantastic team effort and basically a miracle, because never heard of a game making it from whitewood to production basically ready in 4 months. Never happened. I'm not quite sure if it happened again. One very smart thing that I think we done on the and make Kevin life easier for the playfield, he didn't have to actually lay out the artwork for two separate playfields. The playfield was laid out as a regular playfield. It was one layout, one playfield, and it was manufactured that way. It was screened that way, and basically at the playfield manufacturer, they cut the playfield at the very end. They cut the playfield along the angle and provided a two playfield back in production. And that made his job a lot easier to basically design one playfield, and it was a lot cheaper. It was a very cheap way to get around it, making the two playfield instead of buying two playfield. So that was a good deal. And time went by again. We had no chance. What you have to remember, once I was done with whitewood and Kevin started with the artwork, that was it. We were nailed down on what we were doing. And basically, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after he had possession of the playfield and started the artwork, I believe we got the final playfield. And we started building the very first prototype that we normally, the game designer does. We always build our first complete finished playfield and game all together, because ultimately we went and we built 10 more games in production. And since making two playfield was very unique at Bally, they never done it before, you had to be on the floor and make sure that the one playfield was built, the other playfield was built, and the way it was designed, obviously, as you can suspect, there was one complete harness for the upper playfield and one complete harness for the bottom playfield, and these connectors that connect when they put one on top of the other, that's how the playfield connected, and it was pretty much handled as one playfield. What we had to do, though, is also lower, for the first time, we had to lower the playfield into the cabinet because of the height. We had to lower the brackets and readjust all the inside of the cabinet to adjust for the playfield. You have a question?
Yeah, since you had to develop this on such a short time frame,
yeah.
I remember at the time I played the early games with the strobe and the top and everything, and there was something about the rules that there was like a, you could get the first 1, 2, 3, and then to get to number 4 and 5, it got really hard. There was a hump you had to get over, and if you didn't get over that hump, you didn't score very well, and you might not have enjoyed the game as much. Do you feel like you didn't have enough time to...
Exactly, because typically we have once we build the standard, and they probably do it today, the standard layout was you build your 10 games. We had a special room, you know, on the production floor where you put all the 10 games, and guys were invited or told to go down there and play for a few hours and write down the score. And that's basically how we kept track of the score and how we made the adjustment to the game. And we had to play at least 100 games of each one. So that was about 1,000 games that we play. I don't think we had a chance to do that on Flash Gordon because the games were not ready. We're about a week away from the show. I don't remember if it was the AMOA or the ACME show. At that time, all the show were actually downtown Chicago. But we're about a week away from the show, and we're still building those 10 games that had to make it to the show. Time to really fine-tune the rules of the game were very minimum, and that probably could have hurt the game, I'm sure, in the long run. Time was of the essence. I remember the day that the show came, we were still putting the plastic on top of the play field. We had to ship the game at the show. The truck was waiting. They shipped the game, and the game were covered. They made it downtown Chicago, and the only reason the game were covered because we had no back glass yet on those games. The back glass was still being finished downtown Chicago and shipped to the show just a few hours before the door opened. Nobody knew about that, but just to tell you how close it was, not to make the show, but having game at the show without the back glass. So just to emphasize the pressure that was on Kevin and the whole team to get those games out in a matter of 4 months. So yeah, to answer your question, I think the game, the rules could have been polished a little bit better. And unfortunately, that the price to pay when speed is involved in any project you do, no matter what it is. Kevin?
So a couple firsts, I think. It was one of the earliest games that had speech. Did it have speech? Or?
Yeah, it had speech.
Yeah, speech. Okay.
Yep. First game was Gorgar.
Gorgar. It was first game from Bally.
The Xenon.
Yeah, Xenon. Xenon was
Xenon.
At Bally. I was working at Williams, but they were doing Gorgar. I remember that. So different game, but the game went to the show. There was a computer inside the cabinet, and the game was like Gorgar. That was before we could even do a chip. We didn't have a chip yet to go at the show. Very kind of similar situation, but different game.
One of the only other things I can recall was taking a lot of flack for Try the Wood Beast. For some reason, there was a joke attached to that, and we could never get around it. But it was something new that I had thought up. Was like a two-level butyrate where Flash Gordon would be reaching down to the second level of the butyrate, and I didn't remember that being done before, but... I remember a joke circulating, and you can let your imagination go on that.
Yeah, so, you know, I touch up on Black Knight, and really this game tied up with Black Knight, because when Williams showed Black Knight at that particular show, and Bally obviously unveiled Flash Gordon, they were not too very happy about it, to say the very least. They were hoping to be the very first company to come up with a two-level playfield, and unfortunately, they had a little competition. Not that really I wanted to happen. I mean, it happened because it happened, but it wasn't my call. And I got to tell you, I took a lot of flap out of the Williams people for coming up with a two playfield level at the same time, not to say the very least. You know, so you stole our idea, you know, Black Knight was first, blah, blah, blah. And I think they had a good point there, but having said all that, and to be honest, probably Black Knight was the best of the two. The numbers speak by themselves. Black Knight sold 25,000 games in that time. I think Flash Gordon needed like about 12,000, five, about half of the numbers. But even with that in mind, I got to tell you, we're very proud of coming up with this game for the amount of time that we put into it. And if you look at it just as a job that we had to do, I think we were very successful to make it in the time period that was given to us to make it happen. And, oh, go ahead. Well, I actually follow up with a three-level game while I did Electra. So that was also my game. I did skateball. It was my first game at Bali. I came to Bali, and there was already an artwork completely done. It was skateball. They just needed a play field to be thrown in there. The production needed some games, so they asked me to do a quick play field, and that became skateball. And actually, that was the very first game that Karen worked on for me. Skidwall.
The playfield.
The playfield, yeah. The artwork was...
Greg Ferris had artwork done for the back glass, and I may have done the cabinet also at that point, too.
I'm not quite sure, but I think that was going to be... That was an electromechanical game or somewhat, right? This game initially?
You know, I
wasn't sure, but one thing for sure, Bally didn't want to waste the artwork. They wanted the game to be plugged in there no matter what. So I did Blackout about the same time I was doing Flash Gordon. I was doing both games at the same time because, A, they needed the game in production, and I was pushing Flash Gordon for the show. So busy time for me. Later on, I did Spectrum. I did Bally Last White Body Embryon. Electra was kind of a follow-up on it. Every game that I did, I tried to do something unique to it. Spectrum, to me, was kind of unique because they had no ball shooter, if anybody recall. It was one of those games that I can enjoy myself because it was based on the color-coded. I thought some people got it, some didn't. I mean, Electra was a three-level. It was kind of different because, obviously, bottom play shooter was plexiglass at the time. And there was no bumper on that game, too. That was an interesting thing. And some unique way. Also, playing the bottom play field was different. Most of the game, you had to go and play the bottom play field. I kind of skip over to another game here. But the uniqueness of Electra at the time was the fact that you play the whole game. And at the very end, you accumulate time to actually play the bottom play field. So when you drain your last ball, basically, you had so many seconds, and they were yours. You could double, triple the time. So there was a fair amount of time. Yes?
Didn't Ward Pemberton kind of steal your idea that BMX, wasn't that top also the same, similar?
No, I don't know.
BMX. All right, another question for Kevin. At what point in time did the artist, I mean, you guys did the back glass and the playfield, correct? Did you also do the cabinet?
Yeah.
At what point in time did you start splitting those jobs off, and why?
The first game I remember working on where the artwork was split was Skateball, and it was just Greg had started it, and I believe he went on to I was on a different project. Then he went on to another project, and I became available when the playfield became available, so that was probably the first time that I remember that happening. Pretty much after that, we would go back to where you did a complete game until Joe started. Joe Camico maybe started splitting things up. Licensing.
Did you say that you eliminated the strobe light from Flash Gordon because it was too bright? I mean, it's
correct. That was the feedback we got. Yeah, I think the game made it to the show with the strobe light for sure.
And it certainly made it into production with some of the strobe lights.
They started production, yes. You know, to be honest with you, I think I'm not quite sure if it was a combination of people complaining about it or just to take the money out of the game. One of those two, those things didn't work properly or too long. The lifetime of the strobe light was kind of short.
That's right. I mean,
so,
Flash Gordons that I've seen
didn't last very long.
9 out of 10, the strobe light was dead.
You know, absolutely. New technology, you try new stuff, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, unfortunately.
Right, but there are certainly plenty of Flash Gordons out there with the strobe light in it.
There was. Probably you didn't see the strobe light because it stopped working altogether.
Right.
Yeah, people didn't bother to replace them.
I think to add to Rob's question, another reason artwork started to be getting split up was that licensors would come in and want to get involved and actually take some of this art away and do it themselves because they were developing their own art departments. But unfortunately for me, a lot of times what got taken away from me was what I considered the fun part, which is the back glass, and the cabinet, which is the billboard. Those are the two most fun parts for me to do. The playfield and the buttes are the hard part. They're the tedious. That's where the tedium is. And those nobody wants to do. No licensors want to do them. Nobody, and they can't understand the drawings when they get them, and they don't want to do them properly. So I still get a lot of playfield artwork to do. Yes, sir.
This is a license game, and yeah. you did licenses for today, but today this is very strict control. At that time, the first time frame, did the licensing people look at all before you released it?
I don't think we had any negative feedback from the licensor, like change this or this doesn't look right. I mean, I think it would just be they probably didn't even have a licensing in place, you know, a licensing group in place. Or like today, licensing groups represent different titles. But back then, it was probably just executives looking, oh, it looks good.
If I'm not mistaken, it's probably one of the very first licensed game with a movie, tied up with a movie. And I think it was just, my understanding was it was just a flat fee that just went to Flash Gordon Exactive Movie Hollywood, that they pay a few $1,000s for the name, and they were happy with it, and we were happy with it. But because it hasn't been done yet, basically, we were pretty much the very first game with licensing at the time.
I've got a question for Kevin. What can you tell us about Sahara Love?
Can you repeat that, please?
Sahara Love. Sahara Love. It was a Gottlieb conversion, which had Brooke Shields in the artwork.
I have no recollection of that, sir.
Okay. You asked for games with artwork that contain Brooke Shields.
Yes.
Let me see here.
The model for Bear Car? I do not. That was a Doug Watson artwork?
Yeah. It was by Brooke Shields.
Well, this, you know.
See, he started talking
now. Okay, but.
Display. This is the first serial number game. It has your blue Futaba displays, I think alphanumeric, and I was wondering if you remembered that and if you know why you changed away from that back to the standard displays.
Well, it says
that we
extended
see.
Numeric there, and there aren't enough angle segments to make any letters.
They were just messing around with stuff.
Just experimenting? Just experimenting then?
Yeah, probably. I really don't have any recollection at the time, but you know, not sure. I cannot answer that question.
There's a question back there.
There was so little interaction between the licensor. Where did you develop your idea for the background?
We had a booklet, and that's all we had. It had probably about 10 pages of still photography.
From the movie itself, we got pictures, early pictures. I think if anything, you know, with Flash Gordon, I'm very proud for the work that was put together by the team and the guys at the time to get this game on the floor at the show in a matter of 4 months. If anything, it was a hell of an achievement. May not have been the best game in the world by any means, but I think we beat all the records, and we were the first to do, as a company, as Bally, being the first one to be a two-play field. At the manufacturing site is an involvement for manufacturing to get adjusted to building such a game. And at the end of the day, there was a hell of an effort.
I think visually it comes together as well as any game, as far as the carrying the red and black theme. I still enjoy looking at it myself whenever I see one, which is not that maybe once a year when I come here. But visually, I think it worked out well, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud every time I see it.
Hey, I'm going to do a quick diversion here real quick. Since it took 20 years to get Claude, another 20 years from now, he won't feel like coming here. But I want to ask him a question. You designed Black Hole as well.
Blackout,
I'm sorry. There's a lot of people here among the community, the collector's community, that like that game. Can you give us a quick little story about that before we end this?
Well, the theme of the game came, Blackout, actually came, I recall the Blackout in New York, and that's what that it clicked to me. I was thinking, Blackout New York, if we can get the game, the kickoff on the game, obviously, was the game to just Blackout, so we had to come up with the bean to turn off the play field and actually explode back in light. I thought that was a cool part of it. But it was my very first game. I was not officially a game designer at the time. Becoming a game designer back in the 70s was not an easy task. You had a guy that was already predominant. And as a newcomer, you had to prove yourself. And I came from the mechanical background, worked my way to the lab. I helped Steve in a lot of game flash and most of the success he had early on in the 80s, I was the guy behind making a lot of parts for him. And that was a hell of a learning experience, no doubt. So in those days, you basically had to take your, like John Pompidou talked earlier, you spend 24 hours a day thinking about it. And I was working on weekend, going back to Williams at the end of the day, and making my own games, and nobody knew about it until I got caught by Mike Stroh one day. He was coming along with his wife, and I was putting my game together. He looked at it. He says, "Well, I'm working on a game." He says, "Well, see what happened." And he made it. I mean, it was good enough to become a game. It was being Blackout. So that's how I broke into the field of becoming a game designer, but I was not officially recognized as a game designer at Williams. That kind of what drove me away from Williams and go to Bally, because I finally, somebody was willing to put the title game designer on my business card. Williams was not yet ready to do so. So that's what kind of drove me away from Williams.
Well, how about the Blackout feature when you hit all the different levels and then it knocks the whole lights off? That was very innovative, I thought, for the time.
It was. And that was one of my point on every game that I made. It was try to bring something different. Blackout be one of them. We worked on that very hard to be able to just turn all the life. That was a first in the industry. I recall Embryon being a wide body. Anybody familiar with Embryon? We have the in the center area. We have those automotive lights underneath the behind the balls, the capture ball. Believe it or not, that was the first in the industry where actually we used flash lamps on the play field. Using the little flipper on the side as a safe ball also was a first. Every game that I did, I tried to say, what can I do that hasn't been done yet that's different than anything else? I mean, that's the idea of, that's your objective as a game designer, obviously.
Any more final questions? The one thing I want to tell you about Kevin is he's a great basketball player. And also, for those of you who have been around for a while, he is the lead for a rock band called Hypnos, and we were lucky to have him come to Expo several years ago. So if you want to get a picture with him, maybe he'll sign your autographs for you girls. He'll sign your sign it for you. Was there one more question here in the back, Jim?
Have either of you owned
games? I have probably had 4 or 5 games in my basements once upon a time. I don't have any anymore because I moved around and I was tired of carrying those games, putting back together. I also did maybe Pac-Man for whoever knows the game. That was my game at Bally also. But yeah, I own Baby Pac-Man. That was my wife's favorite. Broke her heart when I got rid of it. But eventually those parts, they're hard to find and the batteries had to leak on the motherboard and I just got rid of the game. I got to give it to a friend of mine.
Dave Fix, last question.
You were at Capcom.
Matter of fact, just to give you a quick things. After I've been around the block, believe it or not. I worked with three startup company. I worked with Data East. That was with Joe Camico or Stern. We started an old building that was run down before we moved to where we are today. I was director of engineering over there. I worked with Joe and Liz O'Rourke was our first game over there. So I was I like to think I was a big part of it. Another huge challenge to make those games at the show for Liz O'Rourke, we shipped like 5-6 games and we used 2 for spare parts because we didn't know if the game was going to hold up. But I worked at Data East for about 2 years or so, and also worked with Grand Product. Grand Product was owned by Morosky, who was in charge of Bally Midway. I worked for Dave for a few years. I also worked for Capcom with Mark Ritchie, and Mike Stroh came back. Yep. At a small spiel with Weiko also. And Weiko was a very unique thing. I don't know if anybody recall, but those games were made, the cabinet was made out of steel. Anybody recall those after game from Weiko? Didn't make too many of them. That was not my game. I don't take any credit for that. It was they bought it from somebody else. They had the equipment to make cabinet out of steel, and they wanted to use it this way. But so after 20 years running around the industry, I thought it was time to hang up, and I went to work for Texas Instruments. I'm a design engineer at Texas Instruments. I've been there for almost 20 years now. Still happy with my 20 years in pinball, but I found a new vocation in life, and it's less stressful than pinball, let's put it this way, from my point of view.
Kevin McLeod, thank you so much for being with us today. Wish you the best.